When you hear the word freedom, what comes to mind? What images, what thoughts come into your head? In this country, the way freedom gets talked about usually has to do with flag waving and claims of our superiority, right? Our national anthem ends with that line, "The land of the free and the home of the brave." But sometimes I wonder, how free are we really? Where I live in New Hampshire, some folks take the state motto, "Live free or die," to mean, "You can't tell me what to do." But is that what freedom really is? A hyper-individualism that says, "Don't tread on me," or "Get off my lawn." If so, it's an adolescent kind of freedom, right? The kind that says, "You're not the boss of me." And who among us aspires to remain in adolescence, as wonderful as those years were? There is a deeper kind of freedom, and that's what I want to explore with you. In words I put at the top of the order of service today, David White says, "Freedom is perhaps the ultimate spiritual longing." Take a minute to consider your life. What are you looking for? What are you hoping for? What brought you here today? Does it have anything to do with being free? Robert Bly describes how we tend to give up our freedom a little bit at a time. He writes, "When we were 1 or 2 years old, we had what we might visualize as a 360-degree personality. Energy radiated out from all the parts of our body and all parts of our psyche. A child running is a living globe of energy. We had a ball of energy, all right, but one day we noticed that our parents didn't like certain parts of that ball. They said things like, 'Can't you be still?' or 'It isn't nice to try to kill your brother.' Behind us, we have an invisible bag, and the parts of us our parents don't like, we, to keep our parents' love, put in the bag. By the time we go to school, our bag is quite large. And then our teachers have their say. Good children don't get angry over such little things. So we take our anger and put it in the bag. By the time my brother and I were 12 in Madison, Minnesota, we were known as the nice Bly boys. Our bags were already a mile long." Robert Bly says that this is natural and normal, that we spend the first part of our lives putting some things in this imaginary bag. And then we spend the rest of our lives trying to get them back out again. And this is one way to be free, reintegrating those parts of ourself that we have split off, learning how to live more and more into as many of those 360 degrees as we can. Probably never going to get back to running the way 3 and 4 year olds do. You ever notice that? How everywhere they go, it's like there's one speed, on or off. But where I went to seminary, anti-racism work and anti-oppression work were central to the curriculum and to that community. That school understood that leaders these days need to do their own work around oppression and privilege if we want to help make ours a better world. This started in the first semester with an intensive course that was required that everybody take. which was designed to challenge our assumptions and our perspectives. And so, in my first reflection paper about this, here's part of what I wrote. My wife is a member of a women's chorus which sings songs from a variety of cultures and traditions. I'm deeply moved by their music, especially by the freedom songs they sing. But why do the words of a South African freedom song, "Oh freedom, freedom is coming, oh yes, I know," why does that move me to tears? I am the oppressor, not the oppressed, but I have known my own forms of imprisonment. I have conspired in my own oppression by feeling guilty and not doing anything about it, by believing, as I was taught, that there are familial and societal rules to follow and expectations to meet, regardless of the personal cost, by believing in a judging God that would never be satisfied with me as I am. Though I can never know the oppression that most of the world suffers under, in humility, I can say I think I know something about the longing to be free. That's what I wrote in that paper 16 years ago. And I wonder, any of you know what I'm talking about? About the desire to be more at home in your body and in your family and in your community and in the world? This is one reason we come to church, I think, because we have this longing and this hope, whether articulated or not, that there is something more, that there is meaning and purpose in life, that there is a reason for hope. There is the promise that we will find our way home. We have within us this longing, and it is a holy longing if we will listen to it and try and follow where it leads. I had a working title for this sermon early in the week. It was The Cost of Freedom, because I wanted to talk about this work of being free and what we need to be willing to do and give up. But sometime around Wednesday, I changed my mind, and I changed the title to Freedom and Belonging. But I must have forgot to tell Lisa, our office administrator, because the old title got in the order of service. But anyway, it's like just housekeeping around here. The old title was ended up in print. And I do know something about the cost of freedom, and I think you do too. As a parent, I know something about the cost of letting your children go, of watching them grow into adults and find their own freedom. Some of you remember Joni Mitchell singing about this, how something's lost and something's gained as the seasons, they go round and round. You who are mothers, no matter how young or how old your children are, you know about this, don't you? About both holding on and letting go. Being in this dance of life that is such a blessing and that can also be so bittersweet. The poet David White knows about this dance, about this tension between light and shadow. We heard it in his poem this morning called Sweet Darkness. When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark, where the night has eyes to recognize its own. There, you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your home tonight. The night will give you a horizon further than you can see. You must learn one thing. The world was made for you to be free in. Give up all the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. one of the perils of this age that we live in is the pervasive myth that you can have it all. It's not true. But if you want to be unhappy, believing that myth is a good way to go. We each have to make choices. We have to give up those worlds that we don't belong to, as attractive as some of them might be. You may have to give up on an idea of who you are in order to embrace who you actually are at this point in time, so you can be free. I hope this church reminds you that who you are is enough, that you are part of a great love that will never let you go, and that you don't have to do anything to earn that love. Can you trust that? Because as we learn to live in the presence of and the knowledge of that love, we will become more and more free and better able to do our part to help heal and bless our world. David White says, "Freedom is only appreciated when it falls within the parameters of a larger sense of belonging." When my children were pretty little, I remember at times feeling that my life was pretty constrained. Those of you who are parents of younger ones, I'm looking at you. During those days, I had this recurring fantasy. I'd be in my car sometimes alone, driving somewhere, probably to a work assignment, and the thought would come unbidden into my mind. How far could I get before anybody knew I was gone? It was only a fantasy that I never really wanted to act on. But there was some part of me that needed to at least entertain the idea of being that free, so I could then choose to come back home, which was where I wanted to be. It seems that the deepest freedom comes with some constraint, some kind of container, some way to belong to something larger than yourself. The monk Thomas Merton described the monastery as the four walls of my new freedom. Of course, there are many whose lives are way too constrained, hemmed in by oppression or poverty or illness or fear or violence, to say nothing of all the people imprisoned in our country, the land of the free. But you know, even some of those folks whose freedom is severely limited, they have found ways to be free. In his beautiful book called The Snow Leopard, Peter Matheson writes about time he spent in the mountains of Tibet. And in this book, he describes visiting a monastery up in those high mountains, where he meets the lama of a monastery who seems happy in spite of the fact that his legs are crippled and that has kept him stuck in that place for the last 8 years. Matheson wonders how the lama feels about his isolation there and the fact that he might never leave that place again. He writes, "And this holy man of great directness and simplicity, big white teeth shining, laughs out loud in an infectious way at the question, indicating his twisted legs without a trace of self-pity or bitterness, as if they belonged to all of us. He casts his arms wide to the sky and the snow mountains, the high sun and the dancing sheep and cries, "Of course I am happy here. It's wonderful, especially when I have no choice. Of course I am happy, especially when I have no choice." Isn't that the invitation? To find happiness in this life you have been given, in both its light and its shadow, in its fullness and in its limitations, to know where you belong and who you belong to know that your freedom comes from that limitation and that belonging. Amen.